This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. We're joined by Chris Schwartz. He's the founder and CEO of Rough House Records. At its height, Rough House's roster included the Fugees, Lauryn Hill, Wyclef Jean, Cypress Hills, Criss Cross, Kool Keith, among others. The Rough House Records label sold more than 120 million records worldwide, generating over $1 billion in sales and a plethora of Grammy Awards, 250 gold and platinum records. And with us, as mentioned, the man Chris Schwartz, who is the author of Rough House from the Streets of Philly to the Top of the 90s Hip Hop Charts. Good morning, Chris.
How you doing, Jim? How are you today?
Doing well. Great to hear your voice. And what was it about that time and place that made all this possible?
That particular decade? That was, in terms of, like, it was the most profitable decade in the history of the music business. And that's because CDs had kind of come to full steam, you know? The CD was introduced in the early 80s. It was a co-venture between Philips and Sony. And actually, a friend of mine started the first CD-only label before people even knew what CDs were. And he had went around and bought up all the digital rights from all the labels. Nobody knew what a CD was. By proxy, he became the biggest independent label in the world later on. But, we were in the full, everybody, you know, were buying CDs. And CDs were very inexpensive and easy to manufacture. They're like 65 cents for the actual CD in the jewel case. And the profit margins were pretty big. And then we had the digital onslaught.
Well, you built this empire from one desk and one phone to one of hip-hop's most revered record companies. And you and your book note that you had personal struggles along the way.
Yes. Yeah. I had a pretty long bout with assorted things, but primarily is that, you know, I had an opiate addiction for a long time, better part of almost 20 years. And I had a bout with alcohol but I've been in, you know, I've been in recovery for, I guess, going on about 14 years now. And, there's one thing that it's very hard to, get an addict to get them to get themselves help. When you have an addict that's running a multi-million-dollar company, the reason it's hard to get them help is because they think they're running multi-million-dollar companies that they don't need any help.
Right.
That didn't make things easy.
When did you know Rough House had turned the corner, that you were on to this amazing success that came in the 90s?
Well, we had a record by a group called Cypress Hill, and we knew it was an amazing record because it sounded like nothing else out there. And that was sort of the key to our success, was that we dealt with primarily what we call self-contained artists, meaning that these are artists that all their production is within their kind of microcosm. And so Cypress Hill, we shipped, 30,000 records. And it sat at 30,000 records at retail about almost 5 months. And dead, like nothing. And then the B-side of the third single was placed in the movie called Juice. And next thing you know, we're selling 50,000 copies a week.
My goodness.
And then that same year, we had Criss Cross, which was a behemoth. I mean, it was actually the fastest-selling hip record in history of music. And it had the first single was the most amount of weeks at number one for a hip-hop song, like 14 weeks, I believe.
Was there any resentment for this cool white guy making a lot of money off African-American artists?
In the beginning, yes. In the beginning, it was mainly, it wasn't so much about, you know, making money. It was about, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, when anybody who's of a specific culture orientation or anything, and they have something, nobody wants to see what they have diluted, right? And I think in the, you know, probably like the 80s and a little bit of the early 90s, I could sense a little bit of pushback from, you know, some African-American executives and definitely managers and artists and everything. And particularly when an artist would come into our record label and wanting to try and get a record deal. And if we found that the material was, you know, lacking, or if it needed this, needed that, often it would become hostile. And I would be accused of, well, how would you know you're white? And I'm like, well, yes, I am, but I'm also the guy who owns the record label, and you're here talking to me. So, you know, I'm sure if I loved it, he'd have no issues.
Well, Lauryn Hill is... certainly, perhaps your most famous artist, with a lot of crossover appeal that continues. She writes the foreword. How significant was she to the success of Rough House?
Well, we were already massively successful by the time we got to her solo record. But her solo record was a, you know, just you could not have put a better... cherry on top, so to speak.
Was
but she was. But I'll say this: she, you know, if you want to look at probably our most important artist, it would be her. But there was also a guy from Philadelphia named Schooly D. And Schooly, he was the first artist I worked with, and we put out a record, two songs called PSK Gucci Time, and beyond. They, you know, and it's basically acknowledged by hip hop aficionados. If you look at the documentaries and everything, this was the first actual what we call gangster rap records ever made. And so, in terms of like milestone for the genre and everything like that, I would say his record was just as important, but, you know, not from a financial standpoint.
For those of us who grew up with Motown and have great reverence for that sound and realize that it was probably, I don't think probably, was a cut above everything else in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
Some of the people like me, not me, but some people like me, say you have denigrated the greatness of black artists with hip-hop. How do you answer them?
Well, if you look back historically... okay, at African-American entertainment across the board, right? You can actually find all sorts of configurations, so to speak, of, you know, of black entertainment that where hip-hop is just another page in the story. It's, you know, not only that, quite honestly, you know, we've seen this happen a million times. It started with Stephen Foster, right? Who we consider the father of American pop music. He wrote Camptown Races, Oh Susanna, right? Those songs were considered plantation songs. It was considered minstrelsy, right? But here's the sad truth of it. Stephen Foster never set foot on a plantation. Stephen Foster's brother was a partner to Andrew Carnegie. He was from Ohio. So he basically was a white artist, songwriter, who took minstrelsy and made it his own. And because he was white, it was immensely popular and he made money for it. And then you had the original artist. But then you can move forward in history. You could look at... Bing Crosby and the Delta Rhythm Cats, you know. Everybody bought those records because they thought he was black. Then you can move up further, and then, you know, you have obviously Elvis Presley, and then the Rolling Stones, and then you know, Eminem. So there's been also a proliferation of white artists. Benny Goodman, there you go. He used Fletcher Henderson's arrangements to get the radio show that broke his career. But it's always the, you know, Duke Ellington was supposed to be on the cover of Time magazine, and at the last minute they decided to have Dave Brubeck because Dave Brubeck was white.
Well, the book is Rough House, From the Streets of Philly to the Top of the 90s Hip-Hop Charts, from Chris Schwartz, CEO of Rough House Records. Thank you so much, Chris, and congratulations on your continuing success and your remarkable career. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial, and as we close out the hour, let's go to the most famous artist from Rough House, Lauryn Hill.
Singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song.